Welcome to Lifeline, Eddie. I'm your host, John Aberle. We have a returning guest, my good friend, former Navy SEAL, SEAL Team 6, Kristen Beck. Kristen, thank you for coming on. You're filling in for a person who blew me off the other day.
Okay. So we're going to be totally winging it today.
Ah, that's okay.
Isn't that?
No, you do that to me all the time. As I said to Sharon and the girls before I left, I went, you know she's going to take the show over. I just go with her on this
one.
Hey, you know, and maybe I should have, and I'm sorry I didn't, but I was down in Baltimore's Inner Harbor a couple days ago.
Okay.
And I was thinking, do I call? I know you need a little more time to prepare for me. And I was on the cuff. I had a couple meetings, and then I thought, I don't really want to bother. Did I make the right choice, or...
No, you should come by because we're hay baling out in the field.
So you could have used my labor.
Totally could have used,
Oh God, I'll tell you. Well, how is everything going down there? How are you and Heather? How is semi-retirement?
It's definitely not a semi-retirement. Jeez.
Okay, so tell us about the farm.
Farm work. I mean, so we're doing the hay right now because we had like 5 or 6 days of good weather, no rain. So I ended up cutting like 40 acres of hay and turned into a bunch of round bales and a ton of square bales. So in the square bales, you pretty much have to all handle by hand. It's crazy. It's like how much money you put in the fertilizer and then all the seeds and reseed and doing all the stuff and all the labor for the bales and the thing, you end up making like $1 an hour or less.
Oh, jeez.
So I don't know how anybody could be a farmer. It's pretty tough.
And that's why
Well,
that's why the land's getting sold. I don't know if you remember, but there was a farm up the street from me, and that got sold, and now it's townhouses.
Yeah, turned into a bunch of houses.
That's exactly what it is. And, you know, I can't get mad at the people for moving in. I moved in 20 years ago, but you look around, and the farmland's just disappearing. And what I wonder, where are these people getting the money to buy these $300,000, $400,000 homes?
Yeah.
I mean,
Where are all the farms gone? Are we going to be getting all our food from South America or China or something?
Seems to be the way it's going.
It's crazy.
It is. I mean, it seems to be the way it's going. Do they still have farm subsidies? Is there still a program that works with farmers?
Yeah, I think there is, but they're pretty much going to those huge farms, the ones that, like the mega farms.
Ah.
And they got almost robot tractors going, so the farmer's becoming kind of obsolete. The average age of a farmer in my county, because we have a county farmers commission, a coalition, and so we meet up. The average age of a farmer in my county is 65 years old.
Wow.
That's counting me. I'm 50.
So
I guess
kids,
I'm kind of old, too.
Well, so am I. I just turned 49, so I'm right there with you.
If we had one 18-year-old and 19-year-old become a farmer, it would our entire population of farmers go from being really old to young for one person.
It must be, I guess, the kids coming
no
up.
No kids farm.
Right? They don't want to farm. In my county, we have what's called a transfer of development rights, a TDR, where we can go to a farmer who's selling his land and offer him compensation not to sell it, and he'll be able to stay on it and continue to farm it. And up the street from me, we tried that. Unfortunately, the farmer wanted to, but his kids and his two sisters wanted nothing to do with it. So he had to sell to the developer.
Well, they do something down here called agricultural preserves.
Mm-hmm.
And so our entire, like, 53 acres that we have, the lady back behind us, she has, like, 80 acres, and she did it. So we haven't done it yet. But what they'll do is they'll give money up front to basically, it's like a long-term lease, I guess, on the land.
Exactly.
And they'll give you cash up front so it can never be developed.
Exactly.
It ends up being one house for every 25 acres. Which is a farm.
Yeah, it's pretty much what we have. My fear, though, I remember when it was coming together, and I was on my planning commission for a decade, and I remember coming in front of us for discussion, and my only fear was some attorney 20 years from now with Walmart shows up and knocks on the door and finds an out clause somewhere.
Oh, yeah, they will. They probably got little hidden things in there written.
It's amazing. But then you have some townships or counties as well, and you've probably seen this. They have insulated themselves from it. They started passing different regulations maybe 15, 20 years ago.
Wow.
And what you see is the developers don't want to jump through those hoops. There's easier pickings.
Oh, yeah.
Further out. And I wonder,
oh, yeah, for sure.
It makes me wonder, because you know I'm not that far from Lancaster, which is the Amish community.
Yes.
And
yep.
I wonder how much longer they will hang on in the Lancaster area before they sell and move yep. to Ohio or wherever they would go.
Well, it's funny because we have Amish down here also, and they're buying places down here. So
seriously,
we're called English. So basically, there's only two types of people. You have Amish and English.
Yep.
So they have English houses that are all wired up for electric and everything else, and an Amish person will buy it, and then everything starts disappearing. You start seeing it, just like, whoa, what happened? That's an Amish house now.
You know, that's funny. I did years ago, one of my biggest clients was an Amishman. Had to do with yep. the milking industry and deep vacuum blowers. And I remember the first time I went to his place, I parked yeah. my car right next to the horse and buggy. When yeah. I walked through the front door of his business, there were computers, fax machines, everything that was modern, because they're allowed yeah. to for business. Then yes. when yeah. I went to his house for lunch...
Well, that's what God says. God says it's okay for business.
That's what
but
I
you can't have them turned on Sundays
yeah.
between hours of 10 and 2. That's what God said.
That's what God said. And I remember...
There's a, he wrote it down somewhere. I think God has pretty good handwriting, too. Yeah.
You and I always think alike when it comes to those things. And I remember... his wife, who looked like a East German shot putter, because he was a real small guy. And I thought, yeah. got all these visions in my head as I'm walking into the house. Very, very nice people, of course.
Yeah.
And I went from this modern facility, his office, his business, into yep. basically Little House on the Prairie.
And they're back in time.
Yeah. yeah. Wait,
isn't
I mean,
that amazing?
It was.
So here's a group of people that, due to religious beliefs, reject Western society and all the modernity and everything else, and basically want to go back in time, and they're not strapping bombs to themselves and blowing people up.
No, they're taking us over through their business sense. People laugh.
No,
they're just smart people.
Do their thing, and they yeah. keep it themselves. And hey, if you want to do your thing and have fast cars and all this electricity, go for it. But we don't want to.
No.
And we go, okay. And they're right here. They're next door neighbors, and we shop with them, and we see them every day. And they're not blowing anything up.
No.
They don't have car bombs, and they're not doing suicide vests, and they're pretty mellow. And it's because of religious conviction and everything else that they reject our society. And they're peaceful. Isn't that weird?
Considering everything else around us, yes. And, you know, you made a great point there, Chris, and point I never thought of. That I'm going to steal from you now when I'm in a dinner somewhere.
Yeah, do it.
About how, yeah, if people don't have to agree on anything, really, but they can still coexist.
Yeah. Oh, totally. 100%.
I mean, it doesn't, I mean, you saw it yourself.
There's proof right there.
Yeah.
Religious conviction, and it's a little bit fanatical, if you want to put it that way. But they have their loopholes, they have their things. Just like in Saudi Arabia, they can go to the little island of Bahrain. You know, and God can't see Bahrain, their God.
God can
see Saudi Arabia. They can see the whole continent of Saudi Arabia, but not continent. They can see the whole Saudi Arabia, but as soon as you go across that one little bridge, then God is blind over there. That's
it's like Vegas.
God.
It's like Vegas.
Yeah, yeah. The American gods, yeah. The American God, we can see everything except Vegas. You can do whatever you want in Vegas. It just baffles me.
Well, when you were with the teams, did some of that contradictions really play on you, bother you, as far as, look, you know, I'm being sent here, my team's being sent here, my friends were here, and
yep.
the contradictions were just too much sometimes to bear?
Oh, a lot of it was, because you see the men... You know, when they're in private and doing their thing, or when they're boozing it up and looking at Playboy magazines and watching porn. And then you had a female in one of the towns that we were near. She got raped.
Mm.
And then because there was nobody, I think she needed three people to testify against the one dude in order for her word to count. And because she didn't have enough people vouching for her and the dude that raped her, it was him. His word was more powerful than hers, plus three. And so she ended up getting stoned.
Yeah, we've come so far in a modern
world. So it's the same thing. It's like, what's going on? So, yeah, it's contradictions, you know, wazoo. And it's all because God sometime, 1,800 years ago said something to a prophet. And then a prophet wrote it all down. I don't get it.
And
I think most military, I think Odinism is pretty much for us.
Wow. Christian, hold on a second. We're going to roll into a break. We're going to come back. I'm glad you called in. I appreciate you doing this for me. And I know this will roll and flow wherever it's going to go. So it'll be
fun. Let's talk about Odinism when we get back.
We'll talk. You're listening to Life Unedited. I'm your host, John Aberle. My guest today is retired Navy SEAL Christian Beck. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to Life Unedited. I'm your host, John Aberle. My guest today, retired Navy SEAL Christian Beck. So you know when I have Christian on, we're going to roll all over the place, so just be prepared for it. Christian.
Yes.
Are you out in the farm right now? Tell me you're not on a tractor.
I'm not on a tractor.
Okay.
I had to come out, though, because I got my Marine Corps buddy and an airborne buddy. They just showed up. They're bringing out the big guns, and we're doing some shooting.
You guys are...
I have a big long-range shooting area up here.
You still like it? You still like getting out on the range and firing it up?
Heck yeah. Are you kidding? So, I mean, you can... I mean, the house is a house, you know? You can change the wallpaper. You can put a different coat of paint on it, but it's still the house.
That's true.
So, I mean, just like you can't change the tiger stripes, you know? I mean... It is what it is, you know?
Now,
sometimes we just change a little bit here and there, but not too much.
I want to ask you something. I had a conversation earlier this week, and leadership came up. What is leadership?
Yeah.
What defines a leader?
Sorry.
And it got me thinking about you, about my military service. What, in your mind, makes a leader? Someone you would follow?
Someone that has experience. Someone that has knowledge and is able to put those together and complete a task, difficult tasks. And so after they do that enough times, then they become a leader. So you can't be a leader unless you've already been a follower, unless you've already done things. So too many times you have a leader that just comes out of college and has a bunch of knowledge, has stuff, you know, and who knows what the knowledge is about, underwater basket weaving. And then they come out of college, they stick them in a position of leadership, and what does that person have? Pretty much no experience, some knowledge that is not applicable to military, you know, settings or leadership at all sometimes, and then a person's thrust into that position. I just think it's a really bad way to do it. It's
well,
the military
Vietnam.
Guys.
Well, that was Vietnam. You just described the 90-day wonder there. A big problem.
And this same thing goes on. I mean, it's better if you're coming out of one of the academies, because at least there you get some leadership training. But imagine somebody going through a regular college, a liberal arts college, and getting a degree in social sciences of some kind or some other liberal art, you know, I mean, then they're going to, what happens? Then they're made into a second lieutenant, Butterbar, and then they're in charge of a platoon, and then they're in the middle of a firefight. What does that person have any military experience or leadership experience whatsoever except their one liberal arts degree that never actually hates the military for the most part in most of these liberal arts schools?
That is true.
So I just think it's a really terrible way to groom leaders for the military. I mean, why wouldn't you take an E5 that's already been in there for 10 years, send him off to some leadership schools, and have him? He'd be a great leader, you know, if you pick and choose. And we do that. You know, it's called OCS.
Yep.
But there's a lot of people that frown upon OCS. And I know I had an admiral when I was a junior sailor in SEAL teams. I was an E4. And I took all the tests. I took the AFQT and a bunch of other stuff, AQT, whatever it was, a bunch of the officer qualification courses and or tests. And I jammed on them. I scored, you know, in the top percentage. And all paperwork I filled out. I had a letter of recommendation from my commanding officer. And all that was submitted. and I got up to the Admiral, Admiral Smith, and he said no. He only wants Naval Academy grads to be SEAL team officers. He was super against the whole OCS program and was only letting like one a year through to keep the program alive, I guess, or to tell, yeah, we have OCS and SEALs. But at that time, it was Naval Academy or nothing.
Yeah, I saw that in the Air Force. You have the Academy graduates. They like to bang that ring on the table, too, to let you know.
But so 4 years at the Naval Academy, 4 years at the Air Force Academy. Why wouldn't you want to take some E-5 or E-6 as 10 years? And now we're having, you know, 5, 6, 10 tours in combat, and you're a 10-year, 10 years and being an E-5. That would be the best OCS officer you would ever see in a million years. The dude with all kinds of wisdom and experience and everything else, send him off to school.
I have to agree with you. Now, within your career, and I think we've talked about this privately, I'm trying to remember, did you want to go any further? I mean, going up the chain, getting into the brass, getting into where the decisions, the real decisions were being made on how things would flow and progress. Did you ever want that?
I mean, yeah, but as a, I was a senior chief, and so I ended up in all those meetings because I had the experience and the knowledge. And so they would bring me into those meetings, and I would have a pretty good voice, you know. So there are times when, you know, you do grow as a higher enlisted person, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The master chiefs and senior chiefs and, you know, sergeant majors and all the rest on the Army side and the Air Force side. So, but I mean, that's only going to be a very small percentage that ever gets up to that point. I just think I think we're still set up in like a feudal society hierarchy of, you know, enlisted and officer. And that always goes back to the lords and the peasants.
Well,
they basically had uneducated peasants that they would just enlist and stick them in the military, and that was the enlisted. Then you have the lords who are the officers because they owned land. So now we have the same thing going on here. So you have to be a landowner? Well, I own land, so I'm a lord. I should be an officer, or at least capable of it, right? Why are we working off of a feudal system?
Because it's our traditions, unfortunately.
Yeah, but that's something that can easily change. I mean, well, I guess not easily. They would fight that tooth and nail.
But within the teams, though, an officer, yes, the rank is respected, but if help me, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, it's still a team, and everyone has an equal say in it. I mean, officer, of course, they have the rank.
100%.
But you're not going to, you know, no one's taking a direct order to take a hill from someone who doesn't have a clue. There is
so everybody has a say, but the officer has the
final
responsibility. He has the accountability. He has the authority. And so with all that, we kind of have to look at him and go, well, yeah. You know, it's his butt on the line, you know, if anything really bad happens or if this happens. There's still that thing. And even if it was a chief. So if I'm the chief and I've got a squad with me, you know, 6 or 8 dudes, and I'm the senior guy and it's my mission, it's the same thing. They'll look at me and they'll go, well, yeah, the final word. I say, no, I'm listening to everything you guys have to say, a lot of input. But the final word's still going to be mine because it's me on the line.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, go completely.
So the word is everybody can put in input. Hey, give me the input. But if I don't agree with your input, you can't be mad about it because, hey, I'm the boss. I'm going to take your input. I'm going to analyze it with everything else I have. Maybe I know some stuff that you don't.
That's true. You might have access to information that hasn't been, you know, given out. You might have
or experience
that tells you something differently. I think a lot of people, lay people not associated with the military really in any capacity, don't understand the chain of command, how things work within a specialized unit in particular.
Yeah.
You know, when you get deep into special operations, specialized units, it's a whole different world, wouldn't you agree? I mean, it's much different than, say, being infantry.
Yes. Well, I mean, if you're straight like infantry or you're in a Marine battalion, it's straight officers, very separate and enlisted, because those guys are the ones that are running in the hail of fire, you know, blindly up that cliff and just saying, go get that cliff. But for us, we were already sneaking there 2 or 3 days before, and we can't afford to do that. There's only 4 of us. We can't run in there and have one guy telling the other 3, go run against that cliff. We're like, whoa, wait, dude, we're going to set some ropes here, and we're going to do this, we're going to climb up real slow. So, yeah, I mean, so it's a whole different mission, different mindset.
Well, work with me on this one, because I know the answers, but I want, or I believe I know the answers, but I want the audience to understand this. Being part of a SEAL unit, being part of any kind of special operations team, it's not this hit hard, hit fast, strikes quickly type of thing most of the time. It's thinking, isn't it? It's planning.
Oh, yeah.
It's not 100%. What you see on TV. There's a lot more that goes into the mind than the body, correct?
Yeah, well, I mean, on TV, you're only going to see about 5%, maybe 10%. You're only seeing, like, the action and the it looks cool stuff or the cool guy stuff. You don't see all the preparation. You don't see the three or four dudes out there a week prior to that mission where you see all the things going off and doors getting kicked. But there's a few guys out there 3 days before with binoculars sneaking in real slow and just laying up. I'll tell you what, sometimes in these layup sites, you're sitting there just dug almost underground with a few branches of you, you know, and people 10 feet away. And you're laying there for 2 days, you know, shit, and pissing pretty much on yourself.
Yeah, we had to cut that one there. You just gave my guy a heart attack.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I have to remember it. You got it? Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay. Hey, it happens, and people have to realize sometimes that when I have.
But, I mean, that's the truth. You don't want to show that on TV, a guy laying there for 2 days.
No.
That's 48 hours of film.
Yeah.
When you only have a 90-minute film.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, people don't understand.
Okay, let's get all the action stuff. Let's get the cool stuff. Hey, let's get that one where you made that one joke. And they're out of that whole 48 hours, you have like 1 minute on film, maybe less.
About it. Now,
so Hollywood can't do that. Like when you see patrols on the movies,
yeah,
you see dudes patrolling. It's like, you don't patrol like that. You don't do that. You don't do that. Well, the problem is you have a time constraint in Hollywood, and you also have a frame constraint because you only have so much of the video that can actually be in, you know, on the screen. So if you actually really patrolled and you really did everything, it would be too long, and it would be too much distance between guys. It would be too much. Everything is too big. So you have to shrink everything down by time, by space, you know, in between each other, by everything has to be shrunken down.
Have you thought about being an advisor at all for movies or anything?
Yeah, I'd be pretty good at it because I think I'm pretty patient. I don't really, I see stuff all the time. I think it's called, continuity. So if you have, because they shoot maybe 10 scenes, and then that 10 scenes gets condensed down into like a minute maybe. But those 10 scenes are shot over sometimes a couple of days. And so continuity is really important because you have your hair a certain way. I saw this one film, I can't remember the name of the film now, but the dude's hair was kind of in front of his eye, and then it would be off his eye, then it was in front of his eye, because they shot over like a 2-day period and didn't have it right. So the continuity is incorrect.
See, you pick that up. I tend to pick that
up. I pick it up. I see it. I'm like, oh, my God. Why does his hair keep changing? And then look at that. He had a button there, but now it's unbuttoned.
I'll pick up on if they call
the little stuff. Yeah.
I've picked up on where they've called the person the wrong name.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it just goes, there's a famous movie with Tom Cruise. I can't think right now where he plays a race car driver. It goes back years ago.
Oh, yeah.
One of the characters come into a scene.
Thunder something?
Yeah, Days of Thunder. And a female character comes onto the scene, and he says hi to her, and she says, hi, Tom. And they never caught it. Oh, yeah, you got to watch it. You got to watch it. They never cut it. Kristen, hold with me. We're going to roll into our second break. We're going to come back.
Okay.
A few more things for you. You're listening to Life on Ed. I'm your host, John Averly. My guest today, retired Navy SEAL Kristen Beck. Be right back. Really, my guest today, retired Navy SEAL Kristen Beck. Kristen, I don't think I've ever actually asked you this before, even in our private conversations over the years.
Yep.
If you hadn't gone out for the teams, if you hadn't become an elite operator, what would you have done in the civilian world? What do you think you would have done? Seriously, I've often wondered, where else could God have put you?
Okay, so if I didn't do the SEALs, I got out after like 4 years, or I didn't do it at all.
No military. No military whatsoever. Jeez. You graduate from college, and you decide, I don't know. You'll be a salesman. I don't know. What do you think you would have done?
I don't know. I think I would have been like a bank robber or something.
I
would have been like a professional heist dude doing the safe cracking and everything.
Well,
I'm really good at cracking safes and locks.
Yeah, I remember you.
So I was second story, yeah, breaking and all. No, I wouldn't be a bank robber. I'm a good guy.
No, I don't think so. But I'm curious, though, because...
But I don't know.
Because I know you well enough to know that you're highly intelligent. Highly intelligent.
Yeah.
In a way,
I'm an innovator.
Oh, very much so. I've seen you grab napkins at restaurants and start drawing things.
Yeah.
And you're like, hey, John, what do you think of this? And I'm going,
yeah,
I'm not sure. But you did it in like 2 minutes.
I don't know, because it's like over all the years, and I see so much stuff, and I see what's going on, and we were talking about religion and stuff earlier, and I was being a little, you know, flippant. But I got ordained as a minister about 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And you didn't call me.
And I'm... No, I didn't. I guess I should have. But I don't know. I've been really digging into all this stuff and really trying to figure this out. And there's a really cool, a couple of really good paragraphs in some of the Odinism books I've been reading. And they talk about, you know, people. It's like I started out Christian, Baptist, and went to Jerry Falwell's church and did all that. Me and Jonathan Falwell, who they call Jerry Falwell now, that was his middle name, Jonathan Jerry Falwell. So Jonathan and I were classmates, and we used to always get paddled for getting in trouble and getting in trouble. We were troublemakers. So I don't know if Jerry likes me saying that. But, but yeah, so all the Baptists and the super Christian and everything else, evangelical and all that, and then I went into the SEAL teams, and then I was like, I don't know. Then I'm over in the Middle East, and I'm meeting all these people. And seeing what they're up to. Then I'm in the Southeast Asia, and I'm Southwest Asia. So I'm all over, like, Thailand and everything else, and Buddhism, and seeing what all that's about. And I've got a couple little Buddhas around the house, and a little jade Buddha that's on a necklace. And so, I mean, I know a lot about that religion from being up close and personal and seeing the people and seeing how they worship and do their thing. And then I start seeing what they're doing in India and Hinduism, and I see all that, and I see it offhand and close, like, in person. And then seeing Islam up close and personal, then going to Africa and seeing some of that. I was in with Aboriginals in Australia, and I saw what they were up to. And you know what? It depends on the people. It's like the environment that you grow up in, an environment for thousands and thousands of years of history of living in the desert and doing what they do and being nomads and all that. It kind of shapes how you think, and it shapes how you act and interact with each other, which shapes religion. And then if you look at Thailand or Cambodia and all that whole area and a lot of the Buddhist culture, their environment and the people and how they interact and their language and everything else, it shapes their religion. Thousands, I'm talking about, you know, 10,000 years ago, you know, 5,000 years ago. And then if you look at, you know, even South America, and you start studying the Aztecs and everything else, and now they're pretty much all gone.
Mm-hmm.
But their religion was shaped upon, you know, millennia, you know, thousands and thousands of years shaped who their people are and how they think and how they worship and everything else and how they see the universe.
Oh,
well, I'm from Sweden. I'm from Norway. I'm Norwegian. I'm Viking. And so basically, when I look at the world, Christianity didn't really fit me. There was always still something missing. It was like, yeah, it kind of makes sense, you know, this and that. That makes sense. But it didn't fit. And then I was in, you know, Thailand and with all the Buddhists. And I said, yeah, some of this stuff is really awesome, but it doesn't really fit. And then I'm in the Middle East and I see Islam. I see, yeah, some of the stuff kind of makes sense, but, yeah, it just doesn't fit. And then I'm in Africa and then I'm in with the Aboriginals down in, and I see what they're doing. And I go, wow, I really like the nature part of the Aboriginals. And I like this and I like that. And I see Islam. I like this and I like that. But I don't like anything else. I like this and I like that. I don't like anything else. About almost every religion in the world. And then I start really digging into Odinism. I start really digging into what they call pagan or heathenry or whatever. But that was a label put on by the Christians during the Crusades, during when they massacred millions of, you know, Germanic tribes and the Swedes and everybody else. They massacred millions, the Romans.
Oh, just think of the movie Gladiator. Just watch Gladiator.
Oh, yeah. So I started studying that, and I started really digging in, and a whole bunch of different books, and reading the old, you know, the translated runestones and everything else. And I go, man, this fits. This is like, I'm looking at it and I'm going, it talks to you, and it talks to right to the center of you. And that's what I'm talking about. It's like, there's no, there's religions, they should be different because we're different. And we're from different parts of the world, and thousands of years of ancestry, and thousands of years of socialization, and thousands of years of everything else have kind of made you into those people, and that type of worship and your belief systems and where you are at the core of you. We got to stop all of this fighting over whose religion is best, and it should all be different because we're all different peoples. We're different, you know, races and different areas and socialization and everything else. Why wouldn't we be a little bit different? It's just like the universe. Can you imagine like one star? We only have one type of star. It's going to be a yellow star, and it's going to be this big, and it's going to be that. And so the densities would be different, the colors would be different. I mean, it would be like, why does it all have to be the same? Because the universe is shaped differently, it's diverse, and it's all messed up, and it's screwy, and it's chaotic, and it's nuts.
Well, you lead me to a question then.
Yes.
Do you believe that there's other life besides us?
Yeah, I think there's a chance.
I mean,
we would be pretty, you know, egotistical if we think that we're the center of the universe, which is what the thought was until, what was that, the Copernican Revolution?
Yeah.
So until Copernicus, I mean, we thought that we were the center of the universe and everything rotated around us. That's
pretty
egotistical. How egotistical is that?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can't be that egotistical. I can't think that narrow-mindedly to think that we're the only sentient beings in the universe or in any of the universes.
Did you get to Israel at any point?
Accidentally one time. That's a long story. I think it might be classified.
Okay, you can tell me that later if you can.
Yeah.
But the reason I'm asking...
I've been in Jordan a lot.
That I figured.
And a couple other places a little further north.
Yeah, I kind of figured that too. But the reason I was asking, Israel's on my to-do list for some time in the next 18 months or so. It could be business-related, I'm hoping. Save me the money. But I was wondering, I look at the Middle East, Israel, all of that is like, I don't know, where like pretty much every major religion we practice now claims their roots from. And
the three major religions now that massacred all the other religions.
Yeah. Yeah, and it makes
me look at the Spanish domination of South America and how they wiped out the Incas, the Aztecs, and everyone else. I mean, there were some great religions. Look at even us, the Europeans, when we came across in Columbus and wiped out some pretty major religions. So if things were a little bit different, then maybe those three major religions would be six major religions.
I couldn't agree with you more.
And how come you don't count Buddhism or Hinduism? They're pretty big.
Oh, they are. They're very big if you break it down.
Yeah.
I mean, I was surprised.
So we only think about those three religions because they're the ones that kill the most.
It's, well, you know the old saying, you know, the winners write the history.
That's true.
You know, that's who gets to write it. And that's the way it goes there. And it leads in now to some things that are, I can hear the birds in the background. I can hear the birds. Korea.
Yeah.
What should we be worried about Korea right now? I mean, I'm looking for your insight here to the best of what you can say.
Well, you have to figure that it's just still a huge balance of power, and I think it's a power play. And it's kind of, if you have a really big bully, and then there's a little smaller bully, and then you have all the rest of the people, right?
Yep.
And a big bully tells a small bully, he says, yeah, just go ahead and bully and just go take all their lunch money from all those people and get lunch money from those people. And, you know, if you get in trouble, I'll be right here for you. And, you know, just don't get too out of line. And so the smaller bully is going around and getting all the lunch money and really beating people up and doing her thing. And then the bigger bully is getting all those things by extortion, whatever, and it's fairly quiet how he gets his money because he's so big. Everybody just kind of just comes up to him and says, hey, here's my lunch money. For no reason at all. They just say, hey, let's trade. I want to do that. And here, my peanut butter and jelly is better than your bologna, so here, take my peanut butter and jelly. Although I like peanut butter and jelly, I'm still going to give it to them because I don't want the big, big bully to really mess with me. And so the small bully is going around and just beating the crap out of people. I say crap.
Yeah, you
say
that.
And so there's the relationship between that. And so all we're doing is we're just playing with the little bully and just making sure, you know, it doesn't go too far. The big bully's sitting there looking and going, yeah, you can't mess up all my other quiet extortion. You can't mess up everything else. So, hey, little bully, chill out. You're doing too much. And so pretty soon the big bully is going to tell the little bully to cut it out. And then we're all going to be back to normal. But while all this little fighting is going on and everything else is going on, there's a ton of money going into the little bully's pockets.
Oh, yeah. Payoff.
Yeah, from everyone else. Yep. And the big bully is giving the little bully. He says, "So what's wrong? Hey, little bully, what's going on?" "Well, you know, I mean, all my people are starving and they're eating tree bark."
Yep.
"And our dam up there broke, and we got this going on, we got that going on. I have a lot of problems right now, and we either have to go to war and take over South Korea because, you know, we have to do something because we're all starving." And then the big bully goes, "Oh, well, it's okay. Here's $3 billion.
Hold that thought. We're going to take our last break, and I want to go
right?
a little
Does that
deeper.
Make sense?
Oh, completely. So I'm going to get into it with you because you just described basically the relationship with North Korea, the United States, and certain parts of the world.
And you, China, yeah.
And big time with China. That's
so basically, I just talked about China, North Korea,
United States,
America.
You got it.
Yeah, United States.
You're listening to Lifeline. Eddie, I'm your host, John Aberle. Today, my guest is retired Navy SEAL Kristen Beck. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Lifeline Edit. I'm your host, John Aberle. Today, my guest is retired Navy SEAL Kristen Beck. We have been talking, got a lot of different things, but before we took the break, we were, that's Kristen in the background on her gun range, and you can hear the birds in the background, the wind whipping in the background. So everybody...
Okay, I'm going to get some more quiet.
And before we took the break, we kind of got into something that's front and center right now in the world, North Korea, and some of the discussions about, and Kristen hit it right on the mark, about China being the big bully, using North Korea as an antagonist to the United States. This has been the MO for years.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, then at a certain point, we pay them off in a way of wheat or direct money to help with their lack of farming, lack of being able to feed their people. But the reality of it is most of their economy, most of what they do goes back into the military or the chosen hierarchy caste system that makes up North Korea. I mean, that's basically it. When you agree, it's like a caste system.
100%. Oh, my God. And so their leadership and their, you know, dictator and all of his cronies, you know, they're living in these golden palaces and eating, you know, the fat of the lamb. And then you have all the people eating tree bark. So, and it's true. And then they have all the propaganda and everything else talking about how bad the Americans are, that we want to eat their babies.
Yeah,
and it's like, whoa, what the heck?
Did you experience that? Like, especially when you went into, to say, like, just to liberate Iraq, did you experience people coming up and saying after a while, you're not what we were told you would be?
Oh, yeah, 100%. It was when we first were in Iraq, and I was there early in 03 and all the way through, and we were liberating cities, and it was like I was going through Basra right when we first liberated Basra. And it really was. It was a liberation because Saddam Hussein hated the people at a certain point. It was because it was tribal. And so Saddam wasn't from the tribe and their tribe. And so he's cutting off the dam and cutting off the water. And so these people down there, they were in deep trouble when we went through that city. And so it felt to me kind of like, you know, Montgomery or, you know, Bradley or anybody else going through after World War II, Patton, when they were driving through the streets of France, and you just had people just waving and screaming. And I have video of kids lining up and swimming across the river. I was on the Shatt al-Arab, and they were swimming out trying to get to our boats. And they were just, they were waving and yelling and screaming and just so happy because we really liberated them. And we brought everything in and we tried to reset up their electricity and redo lots of stuff. And then it probably took 6 months to a year after that when they pretty much re-infiltrated the area, the insurgents, and started the whole thing back up. But if it would have been just the people were like so relieved. And we had also some of that first time period, we had women and young girls were running away from us and screaming something in their language, and we didn't know what it was, and so we asked one interpreter, "What are they screaming?" And they were basically screaming, "Don't kill me, don't rape me, don't kill me."
Wow.
because it was a normal thing for them to see people in uniform. The military would just drive up randomly and grab people off the street, and they would be gone. They were gone forever. Saddam's thugs. And it was mostly the Red Brigade.
Yeah.
So they would just grab people off the street, and they'd see a girl that looked pretty good, and they'd just grab her. And if family resisted, then they would kill the whole family. And that was normal. That's what happened every day. And that's what we were told by people that lived there. And I was in there. I saw the torture chambers, and I saw, you know, everything. I saw where they were, you know, they were taking care of all the WMDs and everything else, and there was definitely stuff over there.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So, and everybody says, there's no WMDs, and there's no, and it's like, BS.
Now, do you
I said, we saw everything. I was there in person.
People expected, I think, to see big armaments of automatic weapons.
That's not a WMD.
No, it's not. What a W, chemical weapons.
A 55-gallon barrel of this really bad stuff, biological chemical. It's also some of the precursors and everything else for all the nuke stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's like all that stuff is there. They had them.
Oh, of course they did. And what they got rid of went to Syria, correct?
Yeah. And I know, well, I can tell you about this one group of palm trees that grew suddenly out of the desert in one certain spot.
Okay.
So everything's sitting there somewhere. And it's just craziness how you can say that. It's nuts.
What about ISIS?
Hate of politics. Everything's lies. You know, I don't believe a politician, no matter. You know, if the politician's name, his name was Jesus, I wouldn't believe a word he said.
No. You and I have always agreed upon that. What about ISIS, Kristen? I mean, it looks like, when you look at it on a map, it looks like an amoeba, you know, that kind of migrates here, migrates there, but does tend to...
Well, there's never going
to
be a FIBA, you know, because we think a FIBA, forward edge of the battle area. So the FIBA is that line between the good guys and the bad guys. There will never be that because we keep looking for bullets. We keep looking for guns. And the battle lines are not drawn with metal and lead and people like that, like we think about it.
Mm-hmm.
The battle lines is intellectual. It's social media. It's like so many other, you know, parts of the whole thing. It's economic. It's population. And so if our population in America is only growing at what, like 2.1% or 2.? It's like really super low.
I think we're barely covering us being born and dying. I think we're just about breaking even.
And there's like 10 different jihads. I mean, if people really started studying the stuff, they'd go, whoa, that's what's happening. And so it's population, and it's just like the Catholics did it a long time ago, and that's why birth control and everything else is against their religion. It's not really against their religion. It's that they wanted their population to grow.
Exactly.
And their religion would overpopulate the other religion, and it would just take over. And that's the amoeba, just like you said.
Yep.
And so if Islam has a jihad of, and I don't know what it is, how to translate it, but basically it's a jihad of population. We're going to repopulate the earth, so you have to have 12 kids each. You have to have 12 kids. And if you don't have enough children, then they pretty much punish you for it. So you have to just start pumping out babies for that jihad. That's one of them. And so that amoeba is going to just keep on growing. And as they populate, they go, okay, so your job is you need to move to France. You need to move to Sweden. You need to move to America. You need to move to Thailand. And all these, they keep moving and taking over areas. So they'll have a whole bunch more immigration, a whole bunch more people moving in here because we're not populated.
What do you think with the immigration laws as they are, with people want to stop the immigration of the Syrian refugees?
That was a pretty good
segue, huh? Yeah. It was perfect. I mean, what do you make of that?
Well, the whole immigration thing is a double-edged sword.
Mm.
You know, I mean, we want people to immigrate here. We need, you know, new diversity, new ideas, new people, just like I was talking about the religions. That we're all different, we're all coming from different areas, and we should, you know, worship differently and study differently and think differently. It's okay. It's not a big deal. And so for us, America, saying that quote, and I hate the term melting pot, but it's kind of what we are, and that's why we're great. It's because we do all come together, and we work together, and it's freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of this, freedom of that. And so you're allowed to think openly and look at things, and that diversity is what makes us great. And so we need to continue with immigration, but we also, on the other hand, because of the double-edged sword, we want to be careful. And so you have these, you know, these states, what do they call it, Somalia, it's not unlawful, it's Why am I forgetting that word? I'm just totally messing up.
And I had no tip my
these
tongue.
Unruled. Yeah, no, I don't know how I'm doing that. So if he's unruled, basically there's no real strong government to control anything. And so it's just a lawless land. And so when you have these areas like Somalia, it's happening in Syria because there's a big war going on there, civil war, and everything else going on. So there's huge areas there. They're basically lawless. So you can do whatever you want. And then you go into Yemen. You can go into all these other areas. And pretty much it just makes up that list. And so that list of those countries that are basically lawless, those huge areas where you can have training camps, we can have these things set up, we can have schools and brainwash and do whatever you want and grow this huge drug trade and everything else to bring more money and more people, that's the only ones we're saying no to. So we're saying, no, if you're coming from Somalia, it's pretty much a lawless state. You guys have some stuff going on. It's kind of wacky, so we're not going to preclude you. You can't, you know, we want you to come here, but we're going to check you. We want to double check it. We're going to triple check it. We're just going to look at your background and make sure.
I think there's
and you agree with what we're saying as far as freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of this. So you're going to agree with all these things that we live by here in America?
There's
and they go, yeah, I agree to all that, and I totally agree, and yes, I'm going to be a good guy. Okay, yeah, come on in.
Yeah, but that's the vetting process.
That's all it is.
I mean,
and that's why we shut down a few countries, because they're lawless. They have training camps. They have all kinds of crap going on.
I think we see... Again, the average.
There's nothing
person.
To do with religion. It has to do with lawlessness.
I agree, because they come in. Look at the large immigration that came into Germany last year of Syrians, the refugees.
Yep.
And then they take the host country, Germany, and they start to abuse it one evening.
Yep.
And it's amazing to see that happen, that you abuse. Because if you go back... And looking at the
United
States.
Well, if we just open our eyes and see what's going on and keep an open mind, and we'll figure it out. But you can't sit there and just make believe and cover your eyes up and say, no, it's not happening. No, stuff is happening, and not everyone on Earth is good.
Do you think we censor too much of what goes on? I mean,
well,
news...
it's not on purpose. I mean, look who runs the media. Is it really freedom of speech?
Oh,
is it freedom of speech if only one corporation runs all of the media?
It's restricted freedom of speech.
Or freedom of the press?
Freedom of the press,
it's like nuts. Free to be the press as long as you're backing up that one corporate monster that took over the entire media circus. That'd be a whole other talk. But no, truly, if you look at the press, it's a one giant corporation, and they have agendas and narratives and everything else. If you're not following it, then you're not going to be on the news.
Oh, without a doubt. I can flip through the...
So is that really freedom of the press?
No, not even close. And it's interesting you say
and
that because...
politics? Talk about politics.
Oh.
There's two parties. And if you try to be a third party, they're going to crush you.
That's the one thing they
agree
upon.
Is that really
upon.
Freedom in politics? Do we have democracy? Is that true democracy? There's only two parties, and they totally crush any third party or anybody else. Doesn't sound like democracy to me.
With about a minute and a half left, let me ask you. Now, you ran for Congress... And, you know, you made a good showing. I forget how you put it to me. You didn't lose, but you made a good showing. You were there. I mean, are you thinking, is there a second round coming up for you at some capacity?
No, because just like I said, that two-party system across a third party. I was basically a third party. Now, maybe it said a little D behind my name, but I have a lot of Republican ideas. I have a lot of stuff that I agree with, just
That's
like I
true.
Said about the religions.
Yeah.
There's things that I agree with. There's things I disagree with, but I'm not really in a D or R camp. I'm kind of independent. And I think the Dems are looking at me going, you think too much. You have too much going on there. And all your ideas, they sound a little bit Republican. They sound kind of middle of the road. And it sounds like you don't really like us very much. And so I had zero support.
I read your platform on your website, and this is going to I mean, I expected... to disagree with something, and I got 30 seconds here. I agreed with, I think, everything you had as your platform agenda.
Yeah.
Everything right down the line.
If anyone in this country, almost anyone, unless they were just totally fanatical, one party or the other, almost anyone would read almost anything on there and say, yeah, I agree with that. But it was against corporate. It was against, you know, most of it. It was, you know, it was too far out. It was too democratic.
It was. Kristen,
it was too much American.
Got to end it, my friend. I want to thank you for filling in here. We'll be talking because I got more for you on a personal level as well. You have been listening to Life Unedited. I'm your host, John Averly. Today, my guest was retired Navy SEAL Kristen Beck. Kristen, you enjoy the rest of the weekend. I'll be back next week.
Yep.